Okay, we are in for a very special treat today. Dr. John Perkins is here. If you've been to the Civil Rights Museum or you have the opportunity to go to the Civil Rights Museum Saturday, take advantage of it. But when you go to the Civil Rights Museum in Mississippi, your life will be changed because you are going to see a world that you cannot believe of hurt and pain and just horror of what went on in the past in racial segregation in this state. Our guest today lived it. He's in the museum, but he lived it. And to have the treat to have him speak to us today and share with us today is pretty remarkable. John Perkins is probably known as the father of racial reconciliation for the evangelical church. He pushed the evangelical church to deal with racial issues. And for years, he's been promoting and pushing and teaching the church, and it is remarkable the reach that he has. But he grew up as a sharecropper in Mississippi. He may tell you a little bit about that. He went through horrible times where his brother was killed. He was punished in a jail that was out of imagination of what happened to him. He writes about it in his book. All that went through his life, he left Mississippi, finally came back. It's an amazing story, but the thing I found about John Perkins is there is a wisdom that if you will listen this morning, he will inspire you to reach higher than you've ever reached before. Would you welcome Dr. John Perkins?
Okay. When I come to Belhaven College, I'm always inspired. One of the great inspirations is that my oldest son, Spencer, who led me to the Sunday school and the Bible club that brought me to Jesus Christ in 1957. And of course he was one of the first blacks to graduate from Belhaven College. They honored Spencer here. And so when I come here, I think of him. He's dead now, my son. It's a great story. His son was inspired by his father's life, by his sister's life, during the Civil Rights Movement. And of course, the good news is that one of my granddaughters graduated from Belhaven College here. That's my son Spencer's daughter, his oldest daughter. But the son went to Temple University, then he went to Virginia University Law School, considered the fifth best law school in the United States. And now he's a professor and at Harvard. And he's got the job that he always wanted in his life. And so Belhaven has a special place in my life. I have an honorary doctor's degree, one of my 14 honorary doctor's degrees. And I think I feel better about this one. This is my hometown. And so the joy, Joe Martin sitting here and all these others. So it's a privilege for me to have the opportunity and to be loved and cherished in my hometown. I'm thankful. I'm not looking for somebody to hate. I'm looking for people that I can forgive and to be forgiven in my life. Because if you keep that sin in you, it destroys you. And it's always there ready to jump back on you. And of course, that's the essence. I'm a third grade dropout, you know. So I have to learn all these words. And then I have to learn how to take y'all's words and turn them into Ebonic so I can explain them when I leave here. But I have to, yeah, so it's a joy. What I want to speak about today, I think we are at a pivot moment in the history of the world. I think our speed of technology, the change in behavior, question that people are asking, and I'm speaking at the largest gathering in America. I was at Lynchburg last week, 2 weeks ago. They have 65,000 students on the campus, and they have 100,000 online. I was at Saddleback a few weeks ago, largest church in America. 10 congregation with 100,000 you speak to on a Sunday morning. I'm talking about that in their 20 campuses. And so I'm doing that all the time. But Lord, it's nothing like coming to my own hometown. And this is where my organization was conceived and had the first, you might say, pre-conference to this Christian Community Development Association over in the old building over there on the campus. So I have so many great men, and Joe Martin, I compete with him, trying to love him as much as he loved me. I try to outlove him. I like this. You know, I like this. I like it. So this morning, what I really want to talk about, and I think we got to do, is that we got to learn how to affirm the dignity of this humanity. And so my thought this morning is about dignity. What is dignity? I think that's what the redemption was all about. Adam's sin, and to a certain degree, his dignity was marred. And so Jesus came into the world by sin. Jesus came in to restore that marredness back to its wholeness that it had. And that's why that conversation with Nicodemus and Jesus early on in the ministry, that we had to be born again, born into the kingdom of God. Reconciliation, racial reconciliation, I've been preaching it. My book on Let Justice Roll Down was a first shot in terms of the evangelical church. And I have followed that down through the years. It has carried me a lot of places. But racism, as we set it up today, racial reconciliation has failed us. I don't think it can even get us there. I think that we have so demonized it, profiled it, and made it black and white. Black inferior, white superior. I think they are worn words. I think we got to go deeper than that. I think the reason it don't work, primarily, is that the concept is a lie. Because the concept assumed that there are two races, one inferior and another superior. And then you take the black one, bring them to the country in the 16th, early century, to pick cotton and tobacco, profile them, make them slaves, and then demonize them, and then say, if you can work hard enough, you can be like us white folks. And that's what reconciliation has become. Actually, it's failing us. That's what's fearful. Because I think it's leading now to genocide. We can't stop the killing in Chicago of blacks killing blacks with pistols. We can't stop white folks going into theaters, killing white folks into concert halls, going into schools, going into churches, killing each other. And we Christians now have wrapped ourselves around our faith around ourselves in our political and social ideology. So tight that we are profiled by what pack you belong to. The pack determines who's going to be elected. And if we don't wrap that stuff around that, and we can't penetrate that armor, I believe we got a solution. I think we got a solution. I think the solution is the incarnation of God in Jesus Christ. I believe we got a rock to stand on. I think there's a solid foundation down there. And for me, the rest of my life, with these 7 to 8 years and whatever time I got, my whole heart is going to be looking for a solution or trying to implement the solution. And the solution is Jesus Christ. I like that old song, "On Christ the Solid Rock I Stand." All other ground, whether it's Republican, whether it's Democrat, whether it's Tea Party, whether it's Black Power, or whatever kind of power, those power stands in the way of this grace. But on the other hand, grace is bigger than that. Grace is bigger than that. That's what Abraham found. Abraham found faith and he found grace. And Abraham's whole life was to bring us together, to deliver to us a Savior. And Abraham became a friend of God, a friend of God. Friendship is the highest human value on earth. And that's what God wants us to become, friends. Let's cease the war. Let's bring the war to an end. Let's stop this suicide and hate each other. This last election was the first time in all the election from the time that I can remember President Roosevelt all the way down. I served under 5 of those presidents in some kind of capacity. But this is the first time that hate won. I know. Some of you guys, sweet mothers and fathers, is tied up, got that wrap around. They think these pacts can save us. Oh, Lord, we're at a time when people, either where I go, we're going to have a conversation. Because I think people want a conversation. I think the evangelical church is in a dark spot. I'm going to die an evangelical. I know what it means. I know what the angel said. That's where this evangelical angelus holds. I'm going to define evangelicalism for you because it's getting foggy. It's getting foggy. It accommodating hate. And nobody's opening their mouth. When we call the Guatemalans, what we call them. What we call the Haitian, what we call them. And then we turn around and say, we need some people from Norway. These are white folks. Oh, Lord, have mercy. Where is the church? Where is the church today? I see it here in this room. This is the church. This is the people. Black, whites, together. Serving God, Asian, all of us. Y'all are beautiful. Y'all are beautiful. This is what God called us to. He said, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every ethnos, every group of people, and bring them together and make them one. Make them one that the world will know that we belong to Jesus Christ. The incarnation of God in Jesus Christ is the message. And we can do it. I like that. I like that. I like to think of something. I'm a thinker. I like to think. You know what thrills me? When I think of something I can do. When I think of something we can do. We can do this. We are doing this. That's what this is about. And the way we're going to carry it forward, we got to affirm each other's dignity. What is my question? I'm going to sit down. What is our question? My question is looking for solutions to problem. I think God got us a problem, got the solution. Grace is bigger than our sin. How Great Thou Art tried to tell us that. If the ocean was ink, and the sky and all of that was a canvas to write on, we couldn't write the love of God. The love of God is deeper than our sin. And that's what it's about. The dignity of humanity is that we was created in the image of God. We was created, all of us. The angel said, "Behold, I bring you good news of great joy, which shall be to all people, all people, all people. One people, one people, one people. One people, one blood from all nationalities was made, that we might be one, that the world would know we're disciples." I think Mac would be happy with it. He got a church he called One. I like that. One. It means that there is room. There's room at the cross. We want to be together. We need to be together. That was his work. Reconciling us together. God was in Christ, reconciling the world unto himself, and has given to you and me this ministry. That is the mission. This is no side issue. This is no side issue. This is no tack on to the gospel. The incarnation of God on earth, the second Adam, to forgive us from our sin is the best we can do. We've been redeemed. Now we're the sons of God. Beloved, now you're the sons of God. You're the son of God better when you're loving each other. You're doing the best thing that you can do. You can't exaggerate love. That's why Jesus said, "Love one another. For love is of God. He that loves is born of God. He that loves not knoweth not God, because God is love." Those are statements. These are non-negotiables. Human dignity is not to be discussed. It's to be proclaimed. In the image of God created he them. Male and female created he them. And he said in the great commandments, the Ten Commandments, "Since I created mankind to represent me, don't make no other image." Y'all don't hear what I said. Don't make no other image. He ain't made no two images. "I shall have no other God before me. The Lord thy God is God, is God." And he created one humanity that represents him on earth. I don't care what you think about that. That's a statement. I mean, we should be getting in line. We should be getting in line. Carrying this in all the world. Now, wait a minute. I'm not here condemning you. I'm here, and the reason I'm saying all this, I see it. I see what's coming. I could sing one of those ballad hymns of the Republic. "My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. Black and white, Jews and Gentile together. I see them in the book of Revelation, chapter 7. Who are these? Who are these? From every nationality, living, praising God together. These are they that came through Mississippi and have washed our garments in the blood of the Lamb." And we are praising God. We are praising God. I love you guys. I want you to know that. I'm saying, let's walk together, brothers and sisters. Don't get worried. Let's walk together. Let's don't get distracted. Keep our eyes upon Jesus, looking full in his wonderful face. And the cares of this world will grow strangely dim in the light of his love and his grace. I'm just so, let's talk about it.
That's good. That's good. You know, when your daughter set up this chapel with us, she said you want to do this as a discussion. But she said, "Plan, you'll probably only get three questions, so I'm going to make them count." What I have learned with you through the years is, I don't know if you remember, but when I first came to Bellhaven 23 years ago, I called you like the first week, and I said, "I want to come see you." We met in a little coffee shop over in West Jackson by that mall that's now closed. And I learned then to just let the wisdom overflow and learn. And I asked you at that time, I said, teach me about Mississippi. Teach me how to love Mississippi. Teach me about racial reconciliation. Teach me what I need to know to be used of God here. And you've done that through the years.
And here it is.
Outflow.
And here it is. Yeah. Don't y'all feel good?
This is it. Yeah.
Anybody wants that should expect that teacher to be better than them. I remember the old guy who discipled me. He told me that I was going to be better than him. And I was the commencement speaker at the whatever the graduation we had. When I left, he's the commencement speaker. Y'all are here. Mm-hmm. It have changed Mississippi. Mm-hmm. It's changed this place.
We want to change
my son more. Came here.
Yeah. Spencer.
My granddaughter came here.
Spencer preached here his last sermon before he had his heart attack and died. Right. It was on a Saturday night, and he died on
right.
Monday. I'll never forget that night. And I'll never forget the sermon where he preached on building a culture of grace.
Culture
and it was so insightful at that time.
He invented that word.
Yeah. He did.
What was it? Grace. What is called it? It's a word. It's a big one. A big one. They talk about it now. He invented it. Oh, I know what it is. Play the grace card instead of race card.
Mm. Yeah.
In this place.
Yeah.
In this place. Isn't that something?
That happened here.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So
a lot of
our students, you know, your book, The Justice Rolls Down, is an incredible book. In fact, I had an alum who was so moved by that book a few years ago. He sent me $5,000. He said, buy copies and give it to all the first-year students. And we did that several years ago.
I like that. That's redistribution.
Yeah, that was good.
That's redistribution. I got a little of that.
But a lot of our students don't know your story. Sharecropper, third grade education. You're now 87 years old, got all this energy, but your brother was killed. Night in jail that you'll never forget. But the question, tell a little story, but the question is, out of all that hurt that was so unjustified, how did you forgive those who hurt you and your family so badly? Because we got some students here who have been hurt by people, and they didn't cause it. They didn't make it happen, but they've been unjustly treated, and it's hard to forgive. How do you forgive when you've been hurt that badly? And put it in context of what happened.
Yeah. The idea, if we don't forgive, we sort of have our own sin and theirs too. That's what made it so bad. And that was the mission of Jesus in the world. They shall call his name Jesus, for he shall save his people from their sin. One of the things I'm learning now, most of our sin is, we hurt brothers, but most of our sin is self-inflicted. The biblical thought that most of our sin is self-inflicted, from which cometh sin and agony and fighting among you. That's the book of James. It's where it comes from. It comes from our own self and our own selfish lust. Sin is made up out of three basic ingredients: the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. We are not satisfied with being created in God's image to reflect God in the world. We would really like to reflect me in the world. So it starts with me in the world. You know, and its easiest way now is to keep blame. Is to blame somebody else and keep it. That's destructive. That's a part of, I think the end of that is genocide. You kill the people that looks more like you. White folk kill more white folk than black folk. Black folks kill more black folk. That's genocide. That's our lust. In life. Well, what happened to me? What happened to me? And I guess coming to know Jesus Christ was the beginning. Getting your original sins forgiven. The question you're asking now, your question you're asking Is the question of 1 John? 1 John. The whole idea there is 1 John. 1 John connects us with God. And sin re-separates our relationship with God. It don't re-separate the fact that we belong to God. It separates our relationship in terms of relationship. And forgiveness of sin bring our relationship back together in life. And both people have to participate. Let me give you an illustration, the biggest one. In 1970, February 7th, I was in the Brandon jail. And I was tortured along with 19 other, three of us, along with 19 Tougaloo students. Y'all know what torture is. Torture is to make you agree with your tortures. That's what torture is about. Bringing you near enough to death that you will say three things. First thing you do is tell a lie. Second thing you do is tell the truth. And the third thing you do is agree with the torture. Because he asked the questions in a way that it makes you think he's going to stop torturing you. And the way to do that is to bring you near death. That's what waterboarding and all of that is about. When I ran in jail, I was tortured. I saw the white folks in there look like maggots in a bucket. I saw sin. I saw what you don't want. You don't want to be a racist. I saw it. But I also saw something else, because my solution would have been, if I could have got my hand on an atomic hand grenade, I would have pulled the plug, and my 19 students had gone, and the three of us who went in there to get them out, we'd have been gone. I saw that my heart was just as damaged as their heart. My solution was just as evil as their solution. Then I turned to God. I said, God, if you help me get out of this jail tonight, I want to preach a gospel that is stronger than my racial interests. I want to preach a gospel that is stronger than my black interests. I want to preach a gospel that could change white folks from their maggotness and change me from my stuff. I want to preach a gospel that I'd heard about that can reconcile Jew Gentile together in one body. When I got out of jail, I didn't want to do it. But God put me in the hospital. I went through pain. And it was actually the beginning of it, was the people who helped in my healing. There was a young white doctor there from Australia. He would come down at night when I was in the hospital and sit with me until I go to sleep. I didn't even want him there. He outloved me. There was another black doctor there. He would come up and take this stuff off of me, take me out in the car. My main doctor was a white girl, and she had wanted to be a missionary. And she was seeing what I was trying to do was what she wanted to do. I didn't care if they come. But their love began to break me down. I guess you know I've lived a pretty big life. I've lived a pretty good life. And it's been the quality of friends that God's given me, both black and white. I think it's, I'm an athlete, I guess you know that. I've got an athletic mind. I'm no longer an athlete. I love competition. I have tried to outlove my friend. I haven't won. I have won in the sense that I haven't been able to outlove them. And that's what I think is that we got to be engaged. We got to be some of that change we want to see. We got to forgive each other. Even today, most of my sins are self-inflicted. I need help. We need each other. I think that's the truth. And I have experienced that. I think that's why I can come here. I've experienced love here. Love one another. Because love is a God. He that loves is born of God. He that loves not knows not God. And the purpose of God coming into the world in Jesus Christ was to forgive our sin. I think we have to accept it. We got to come to the place we accept it. In the last few months, I've been going through the last year or so, I've been going through a dark hole. I think God now is preparing me for the end of my life. I think, but the people come around me, people like Matt and others. Joe, when I get your little note to come to your class, it always encourages me. Friendship is powerful. If I'd have known what I know now, I would have been more courageous. If I'd have known the value of forgiveness, man, you sitting here saying that what you said before all these people. I'm going to put that. Y'all catch that. I want to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And then be here. Here's an out of an audience. In my home state, the Mississippi. Oh, man.
Let's talk
so
about
it. So it's that learning. I mess him up, don't I?
That's all right. You go ahead.
It's that learning how to affirm each other's dignity. I'm not walking around in the street looking for no white folks to hurt, to hate. That ain't on my mind. I don't know what's on your mind. I'm looking for some more lovers that we can learn how to love, that we can learn how to affirm each other. I mean, we got a chance to do this. We can do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this the rest of my life. Yeah. Go ahead.
We live in a time where the symbols seem to have such power to separate us. I had an unusual experience this summer. I was down at the Old Capitol Museum for reception. Now, this is the old Capitol where Mississippi seceded from the Union. They were the first state to pull out. You know, you can say it's about state rights. It didn't have one thing to do with state rights. It had all to do with slavery. They pulled out of the Union. I'm in the old Capitol. The Speaker of the House came in, and I'm in the middle of the rotunda. I'm working on him like crazy about this state flag. And I said, why can't we get rid of this flag that divides and separates us? We don't need symbols that put us on one side or the other. How can we get rid of that? But that's just not one. Everybody puts up their Facebook posts of this thing and that thing and all this stuff's going on. And of course the kneeling for the national anthem, you know, I mean, we got people who are desperate for justice, and they found that's the only way they could get somebody's attention. And others, of course, who think, yeah, that's our flag. Don't do that at our flag. How do we find a way to get people to stop the shouting and to care about each other?
Yeah. No, I'm thinking about this all the time, man. I think about the soul. What is the soul's body, soul, and spirit? What does they contribute to human dignity? Where do you get passion? It's because when it said Jesus said passion went out of him, it works. When Jesus heard passion, when somebody touched him, passion goes out. If you're passionate enough, you got solution. So the question is, where did passion come from? I think passion is entering into the pain of others. It's stop over-loving yourself. And you begin to sort of love your neighbor as you love yourself. I think I've just said a little bit about passion. I think that Australian white guy sitting by my bed, that black doctor coming and taking the stuff out of me and taking me when everybody else had to stay in the hospital, you get tired of all this stuff on you. And he would take me on the car for a ride. I think it's looking for serving others. I think it's in an end to the pain of others. And I think that was the message that you were trying to get over to the flag man, to our representative. Look at the pain. Look at the many blacks have been hung on a tree. Look at the many deaths. Look at the poverty of our nation, how rich we could have been in life. That's our answer to coming out of poverty. Coming out of poverty. I was in Arkansas this week speaking, and I was driving back through the Delta. And you know, look, I got a passion. I said that in my latest book. It gets more creeks than anyone. Your question. How do you love white folks? You say, well, I'm discovering that poor white folks in Mississippi is not liked by nobody. You ought to know that. You ought to know that. You ought to know that. I know maybe why Miss Clinton lost the election. She helped to create the idea of white trash. But those same folks voted for Trump. Lord have mercy. You jumped out of the fireplace and went into the fire, into the oven or wherever. Neither one of those represented the affirmation of human life to its fullness. We got to understand that. Y'all follow me? You seem to, I think it's, we're at this point now. Information is so sharp. I can, you know, at my house, I don't know how to Google and do all that. I just said to anybody, anything I want to know, I said, Miss Sarah, tell me something. Tell me something. Talk to me, you know, in life. But I think it's looking for the strength to love. Looking for how we can see other people reflecting the light and the image of God. I think that's where it's at. That's what's there. And then when we do that, now, I'm a little bit light on forgiving yourself. I don't see that in the Bible. People put a lot of thing on that. I got the idea that it's only God that can forgive my sin. I don't go to myself to get my sin forgiven. I think we got to cry out to God. And we got to confess our sin one to another. And the only way we could, the reason we confess, when you're confessing your sin, all sin is against God. And confessing is saying what God already knows. And then he forgives us based on what he knows about us. How many times he forgives us? Again and again. I get so caught up sometimes. My wife, she hold me hostage. I do something and I say, honey, will you forgive me? And she'll say no. I say, honey, you got me held hostage. You got me held hostage. Because she said, because you're gonna do it again, she really locks me out. Because I have the capacity to sin again. I have a little trouble with that. And she know it. And when she tell me she ain't forgive me, she won't forgive me, I'm in trouble. And so I think it's this idea of learning how to forgive each other. I think it's a learned skill. I think you got to practice it, forgiving each other. That's what it means. I've been with this woman now for 60 7 years in June. She still got me held hostage. Because I made a covenant to her way back there. Said something like, be together unto death do us apart. I think it's these kind of searches we should have. Search me, O Lord, and know my heart. Try me and know my thought. And see if there be any wicked ways in me. You know when I do that, I find some. I find some. And when I look at that and try to love others, you know, y'all looking pretty and pretty to me all the time. If you focus on loving God, you'll discover that God is going to love you back. And that you're going to look at people different. You're going to look at people different in life. That's what we got to do, folks. That's what I want to do with the last energy of my life. It came up a big thing about going to the opening of the museum. And I went, and some people said they wasn't going. I said, the Bible tells me not to hate my enemy, but to love my enemy. And I can do it better if I'm beside of an enemy. Now, I wasn't calling those people my enemy. I wasn't calling my enemy. And everybody got the right to do that. You know, I'm not telling them. I think the idea is our laws don't change us. Our laws don't change us. Our laws only remind us of our sin. It is God's grace in each other that changes each other. Somewhere between that is passion. Somewhere when you can walk in somebody else's shoes for a little ways, that's passion. When y'all go on a mission trip and see other folks who are suffering more than you, it brings your heart, don't it? It hits your heart. And I think that's what we got to look for. Not looking to hate in it. Each other. It's time enough. I said that when I realized I was going to be successful. There was a time I realized that I was going to be successful in what I'm going to do. And I was beginning to think about what I'm going to say to my mama. She died of starvation when I was 7 months old. I'm looking to see her. I'm getting close. I'm sort of anxious to see her. I've never seen a picture of my mama. I've seen her sisters, and I see that, and I look at my daughters, and I make the assumption that they look like my mother.
Wow. We got to go. They got to go to class in a second. But let's join together and thank you, Dr. Perkins, for being here, would you? Wow, what a day. What a day.